Good morning. Good morning to everyone on this December 24th, day before Christmas. I know you're up and out trying to finish your last minute shopping, but I think we're going to talk about something that is positively moving us in the right direction. You are listening to Higher Ground with Sister Karen, Brother A-Dub, and the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, the station management, or the board of directors, or any other WEFT associate who is not here in our studio. It only reflects the comments of Aaron. Aaron reflects his comments, and Carol reflects her comments. So just make sure that that's clear, that you're on Higher Ground this morning. We're going to have a full show this morning talking about a few things that have happened over the last several weeks. And what we expect to happen in the next few weeks. We also want to talk about, as we leave December going into January, and we begin to talk about our annual Martin Luther King recognition programs, some part of that program that's terribly missing and every year has been missing is the economic opportunity for the Black community itself. And so we're going to talk about that a bit this morning. I hope that you will join us in the discussion of that, as well as even you an update of the People's Agenda that we hosted a couple of weeks ago, as well as there are some spring elections that are important coming up, and what's happening in Springfield. I'd like to share a few comments there, as well as SEIU and Ask Me updates of what's happening in local community. People have to realize a lot of people in Champaign-Urbana are members of one or the other of those two organizations. I believe those are the largest here at the university, is SEIU and AFSCME. So we'll talk about economics today and the impact or the lack thereof in the community and how it really imparts or impacts public safety as we continue to hear about this issue. But I hope that you are up having some coffee. Right now I'm drinking a Premier protein shake. And it is... I don't know. I liked it at first, but now I don't like it, but I need to drink it. So I'm going to drink that, but wishing you a great Saturday morning today as you get moving about. We're going to play a few clips this morning from Dr. King that really speaks to our first topic area today, which is really empowerment and economic opportunity that is missing in the Black community. And we have to talk about it from that standpoint because there's so much happening that people are heightened around the issues of public safety, but don't understand how economic opportunity ties into those issues. And so we're going to try our best to share some of that with you all today. So we've selected a few clips from, I believe, which speech is this? That
I'm not exactly sure which speech it is. This is your boy, your homeboy, your brother, your friend, a.k.a. Aaron Ammons, brother A-Dub. Live down here at WEFT 90.1 FM on your listening dial. I also want you all to encourage someone to look us up at www.weft.org. If you know someone who does not live within the listening radius of WEFT, send them a text, an instant message, a message on Facebook. Holler at them on Facebook. Let them know that they can join this conversation by going to weft.org and click on Listen Live. So we don't have to be right here in the Champaign-Urbana area. You can be someplace else all over the world and you can join this conversation. But we need you to help spread that word. So I want you to take that responsibility and help us magnify and amplify what we're doing down here and send that text message out to somebody right now. So y'all to listen to Brother A-Dub and Sister Carol talk about Powernomics, Black empowerment, economic opportunities, along with the social justice that we normally do. The phone numbers down here are 217-359-5483 and 217-359-6545. You can take the opportunity to speak with us live on the air, ask a question, or make a statement. If the topic gets really hot, you know, a lot of people start calling in. We ask that you keep your comments and your questions brief, you know, 2 minutes or less, so we can keep the lines open.
2 minutes, that's a lot on radio, bro.
We can keep the lines open and stuff. So she want to start this stuff with me down here on my show. Already, this is my show. I keep trying to tell you, it's my show. Like
60 seconds or less, bro.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, that's about impossible for Martell. Mm-hmm. I mean, excuse me. What's up, Tell? All right. 359-5483 or 359-6545. I want to say what's up to my brothers out there. I know that NEBC is listening to me, as well as many others out there, probably Dr. Underwood, my mama, my daddy, my sisters, them. I know some people do that. And I got that from Eric over down at WBCP. He used to just, man, give this long list of shout out to everybody he had ever met in his whole life, because he knew they was listening to BCP. All right, y'all. So Carol's going to also give us a little bit of a foundation or a quick history lesson on Kwanzaa. Of course, we know Kwanzaa is coming up, African American celebration after the Christmas holidays, basically.
Many
starting.
People celebrate Kwanzaa.
I know. I understand that. And I'm just saying that we're going to take, as after Carol does the sort of overview of Kwanzaa, we're going to take the cooperative economics piece and build on that and use it as a prelude into our conversation around Black economics.
So Kwanzaa is a celebration. Kwanzaa, the word means first fruit. First Fruits, which was created by Dr. Malanga Karanga in 1966.
Somebody sent me an email or something saying Happy Kwanzaa, or a text, and it said K-W-A-N-S-A-A. How do you spell Kwanzaa?
K-W-A-N-Z-A-A. Kwanzaa.
It's a key Swahili word, and yeah.
Dr. Karanga, who still teaches out in California, I think he's still at Berkeley or something, but he created this cultural holiday, a celebration, not necessarily, it's not a holiday, I shouldn't say that. It is not a holiday, it's a celebration of principles that was inspired by various parts of African culture and symbology. And so he created this experience that reflected the needs of African American people in America. But today, Kwanzaa is celebrated by millions of people all over the globe, actually, and throughout the diaspora. And it's a non-heroic, which is important, non-heroic, non-religious, non-military, apolitical celebration. That's a whole lot. Non-heroic, meaning there's no person that you're celebrating or worshiping on that day. It's non-religious, so any person can celebrate seven principles that are reflected in Kwanzaa. It is not racialized in the sense that it doesn't apply to all other ethnic groups. That's what is apolitical. But it's a celebration of the triumphs and labors of African Americans in particular. And it starts December 26th and goes for a week through January 1st. And it maintains really a core value system, which becomes at least the minimal standard for Black families. And this is an important part to really uplifting, socially uplifting Black families and Black communities, is to give them their own cultural experience. And we can circle back to that as to why some programming is ineffective in working with African American people, even no matter how good your intentions are, because those programs are devoid of the cultural experience of African Americans. And so this experience or celebration called Kwanzaa, which starts December 26, starts with seven principles. The first principle is umoja, which means unity. The second one is kujichagulia, which means self-determination. The third is ujima, collective work and responsibility. The fourth is Ujamaa, cooperative economics, which we'll talk about that one more today. The fifth one is Nia, or purpose. The sixth is Kuumba, creativity. And the seventh is Imani, or faith. All seven of these principles are reflected by a representation of a single candle. And of course, you can't see the candle. So, but it's three red, it's three green, and it's one black candle.
And the black candle is umoja.
You wanted to go through all.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, you didn't have to do that.
Each candle stands for one of the principles, the seven principles, and there are other elements of Kwanzaa that is reflective of the presentation itself that has other symbols, including the fruit itself, which reflects first fruits, the representation of your children, which is represented by ears of corn, which I got to get my corn.
Muhindi.
Muhindi. There's a representation of a mat, which is called Mkeka. A bandera, which is a flag that represents black people throughout the diaspora, which is also the red, black, and green. The Kikombe Cha Umoja is the unity cup, which the family utilizes to symbolize the unity of the family or the group. The exchange of Zawadi is a gift at the end of Kwanzaa between family, and it's usually culturally related or creatively for educational purposes. And the candles are held in a kanara, which is a candle holder. So all of those pieces are a part of the celebration of Kwanzaa, and there's also cultural activities and events. There's dinners that are hosted by family members and so on and so forth.
And reflections on the year.
Reflections of the year.
Always bringing in the creative energy that each individual has brought forth in that year, what your accomplishments are, and thinking about what your goals are going forward. Of course, it begins December 26th and it ends January 1st. So it really coincides with a lot of people talking about New Year's resolutions and things like that. But Kwanzaa is more like, you know, you're setting an actual goal for yourself as well. And we think it's a little more effective and influential than just a resolution which stands by itself. Your goals and your objective is supposed to be connected to the cultural experience of Kwanzaa, and having a particular goal and objective that doesn't necessarily, it's not just for you, right? It's for the community, for the family that you are a part of. So, you know, there'll be some celebrations. Mother Dawn was in she popped up in one of the dreams I had the other night, because I had spoke about her to someone else as we did the Speak Truth, talking about where we could do the 7 days as we move around and have a dinner and a celebration of each night at someone else's home. And I'm going to reach out to Mother Dawn to see if we can culminate at the Church of the Brethren for the overall day, for the last day. But anyway, we want to just at least reach out to other people. So if you're interested in hosting a day, let us know. Again, the phone number down here is 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. And my energy radar tells me that there's only a couple of people listening right now for some reason. Everybody haven't woke up yet. So I need somebody to call me and say, I'm listening, Brother Aaron. I'm listening, Dub. I got you. 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. And I just want to send a shout out again to Craig and Byron and to Dee and Tammy. We had a wonderful time last night hanging out with you all down at Hamilton Walker's. It's a nice place downtown Champaign. Although I'm a Urbana City Councilman, I just got to give a shout out to him. It's a nice place. All right, who we got? Go ahead, caller. You are on the air.
Live action.
Live action. Love action. What's up, L.A.?
I'm struggling, but I'm listening.
All right, my man.
I'm eager to hear some of these conversations.
Okay, my man. I appreciate it. Peace. All right, live action. LA is in the building, definitely listening. All right, Sister Carol, so why don't you pull up Ujamaa, and then let's go into the importance of having these resources and having economics connected to social justice.
So as I mentioned earlier, that the fourth principle is called Ujamaa, cooperative economics. And it says to build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. The interesting thing, as we are on the eve.
Is that the end of the definition?
That's the end of the definition.
Say it one more time for me.
To build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together.
Okay.
That is the definition of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Now, what I was going to say was the interesting thing about that, as we on the eve of December 25th, and people are spending money. Of course, we support people to shop local small businesses, but you know, of course, that's not necessarily the case. We're big box shopping and funding the very corporations that ultimately use those dollars
to support oppressive
policies and oppressive candidates, you know, at the same time.
So make us understand
people
that.
People can't make the connection.
All right, so make
right?
it for us.
So as we, you know, I appreciated listening to the radio the other day, and there was an advertisement on Shop Rantoul. And it's about shopping in the local small businesses in Rantoul. A brother who opened up a restaurant there, which I don't know the name of it. I happen to see it on this news announcement about Shop Rantoul. And they was describing how important it is for you to shop in your local community because you're trying to invest your dollars into that tax base so that your, in this case, village of Rantoul will have revenue that they can spend to improve the community, right? That's the whole concept of shopping local. Mm-hmm. And the ad says, you know, you don't have to go all the way down the highway, and they're referring to Champaign-Urbana, naturally, to shop. It makes sense, right? So you want to have businesses in your community that you can support, small businesses that you can invest in so that your community can A, hire people, and B, improve its own economic status. Well, big box stores that are funded, like, you know, all your products you get out of your Walmarts and things like that, those dollars usually go and they're into public policy areas to support policies or politicians that actually vote or act against your self-interest. And you give them the money to do that. So that's why Aaron and I do not spend any money at all in this season at all for various reasons. One, we don't celebrate it in the traditional way. If it's Jesus's birthday, why are you getting a gift? So we just kind of pass that along. But at the same time, we also spend most of our time trying to educate our children about the importance of cooperative economics, Ujamaa, so that you can build your own stores, your own businesses, your own restaurants, and benefit from them collectively.
I think that you're driving home a particular angle. I wanted to look at it also from another angle as we talk about cooperative economics within the African-American community. Listen, one of the things that we struggle with in our community is that we feel some sort of guilt or shame when we operate for a particular purpose, which is to build our community. But I think it's pretty obvious now, and it's okay. But when you look around over in on the just right across from Cunningham, or where you see Eloasis and some of those other places, the Latino and Mexican restaurants and things like that. If you go to El Toro, if you go to many of these places, what you're going to see is Latino or Mexican people working in those places. You're going to see a very, very small percentage, if any, of any other ethnic group working in those places. And so those individuals build a shop, build a restaurant, build a store, even, right? To support their community. And then, of course, that contributes to the overall economy. But they know that they have to employ their people so that they have the things that they need as individual families, right? And as a collective community. It's the same if you look at the smaller Indian community we have with the Dunkin' Donuts and things like that, or some of the hotels that they may own. The Asian community. When you go to I don't know when last time I went to a Chinese place or a restaurant and found and saw anybody other than a Asian person working there, right? So there's no need to apologize for you having a specific focus for Black economics, right? For you to be able to build your community and be able to support your children in their endeavors with the money that you earn from your shop, and for you to intentionally spend money there. Now, I just named all these other places, whether it's Baskin Robbins or El Oasis, El Toro, or the Chinese restaurant, because I patronize those places. I go to those places. I just went to Hamilton Walker's last night. So it doesn't mean that you don't buy anything from any other group, but you should have a particular focus, right, on the group or the ethnic group that you are a part of, especially when your situation for us as African Americans in this country or in this community is what it is, right? With unemployment rates being what they are, the need to build things within our own community, and the respect that you earn when you do that. I think that's extremely important.
Yes.
So, I mean, there are businesses. I know Will Kyles and the Black Chamber are trying to really highlight, you know, I enjoy going to Hybrid Fit. I enjoy going to Wooden Hog. We know we've always had the beauty shops and barber shops and things like that. But I do think that there's a focus now, Suits by Soldier. There's some things that we are doing, I believe, in that area of black business, but we need to also pull it together. We have construction companies with VIA and Magnet Electric. But there's some people who are doing some pretty positive things, and we should highlight that and we should support them.
Absolutely, every chance you get, right? So we know that we have a real need, because those businesses have to grow, and they need to have access to capital, which is what this is. This discussion is about there are
to
resources.
Them,
you
yes.
got to have the resources to undergird the building of that business. And so, as you named some of the, like Baskin Robbins and Baskin Robbins all over the country, is undergirded by the Indian community, because they have the resources from manufacturing in their own country that they undergird and purchase these businesses. They have money that they can go to their own economic structure for. We don't have that economic structure to go to establish that business. So we have to go to a traditional bank loan, which is a whole nother discussion. It's not another discussion, but it's a little more detailed than I think we wanted to do.
Well, I think what we're going to hear this
but
piece.
But there are some, right, there are some things that are not in place for black entrepreneur development and undergirding the development of those businesses so they can grow. And so I think Dr. King will kind of touch on that in this very timely message that you'll hear a few clips from this particular speech. But it's timely because he's going to identify what the barriers are, right? What were the barriers to keeping black development from happening? And as we look honestly, as we enter into the celebration, and I have this in quotes, of Dr. King's birthday, we have to look more deeply and require that those who are celebrating or promoting this annual event, that they look more deeply into the message of Dr. King. And that message is not just the, can we go into your restaurant and spend our dollars? And I think you said something yesterday about that. So if you're ready, I'm ready for the first clip.
Okay. So, contextually, just to add a little piece here, I am reminded on a regular basis, or I hear on a regular basis, that, you know, we need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, right? Just want you all to think about that as you listen to this. Okay, why isn't this playing?
He's trying to get the clip playing, and for some reason it ain't playing. Are you sure it's not playing? You can't hear it in your ear?
Okay, maybe now I will. All right. Something's not working there.
Further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington, in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
It disappeared.
Wait a minute. It didn't disappear. You might forget, Martin Luther King was assassinated in April. The Poor People's Campaign was supposed to go to Washington in April.
Mm-hmm.
So the organization that mobilized it was essentially decapitated and thrown into chaos about 3 weeks before it was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest. which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps.
So, again, what we want to focus on is that we know we're getting ready to come up. I've already got the emails and the flyers and everything. We're going to be talking about the community celebrations. It will be all this MLK celebrations from the campus all the way into the community. And we'll hear typically what we've heard is a lot about having a dream and all holding hands together and all that kind of stuff. But the challenge today that is being put forth is that if you are serious about addressing the educational, social issues that we're facing as a black community, then you're going to be serious about undergirding economically the issues or the focus or the goals that we have. And so when you hear this bootstrap thing, Dr. King, in the Poor People's Campaign says, your bootstraps look like land. They look like education. It looks like low interest loans, right? So that you can mechanize those things. So you can have the capital to build your business or to use your farm. But land, remember that whole 40 acres and a mule, y'all, right? Land. The Homestead Act, where they just gave land. He just talked about. And the land grant institution, the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And then he talked about the extension programs that are at the University of Illinois so that the white peasants would be taught how to farm. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to just give you the land and you don't know what to do with it. I'm going to give you land, right? Acres of land. Then I'm going to teach you how to use it. And I'm going to give you the money that you need to make it happen. And then now today, we, like he said, we're millions. I don't know how many farmers are getting paid not to farm. So, with and subsidies, all these subsidies, yeah, that they tell you, you own welfare. But that's what a subsidy is. It's government welfare.
Well, you know, you said about it's very difficult to understand the economic plight of the African-American community. And this is nationwide. This is not Champaign-Urbana. This is nationwide. These are national policies that create the inequality in income, mm-hmm, right? So people keep saying, you know, there's a big inequality gap in income. How did that happen? Well, people actually don't want to know the how it happened. They just want to say that it happened, right? Which is the damage that we do to black minds as well as to white minds in our society is not really dealing with reality and the truth. And so as you talked about Dr. King saying this is what was given to these folks to help them get on their feet. Well, after emancipation in 1875, by 1877, they had established the Freedmen's Bureau. And the Freedmen's Bureau was the only economic bureau established to, quote unquote, assist formerly enslaved African Americans in this country. And there was a lot of white backlash from that. They didn't want the government, meaning the federal government, to help the formerly enslaved folks from the Freedmen's Bureau. And by 1877, now emancipation was only 1875, right? So within less than 2 years, you had this huge fight that's going on between the state and the federal government. And they came up with something called the Compromise of 1877.
Mm-hmm.
So the Compromise of 1877 is some black historians say, is arguably the most devastating single government action in the history of black America. And this establishes where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
That is when a group of politicians convened at the Warmly Hotel in Washington, D.C. to attempt to resolve a deadlock presidential election of 1876 between Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden. They agreed that if Hayes were awarded the presidency, he would remove government protections of black ex-slaves in the South and allow the former slaveholding class to return to power, which is to return their land. Now, you have to understand that in 1876, or right after emancipation, the federal government had they've taken it by federal order. I can't remember the word. Mm-hmm. But they took the land from the slaveholding families by federal order, and then they began to parcel that land out to those formerly enslaved on that land, right? So they gave them land so that they can farm and take care of themselves. But by the time this presidential election comes along, there's a compromise, which is the compromise of 1877, to return the white slaveholders back to power.
And to give them their land
give
back.
Give them back their land, which then left black people who had just, quote unquote, been emancipated, collectively powerless and without economic stability in order to build something for themselves on that formerly slaveholding land. And so as a result of that.
I just keep hearing this word land.
Land is the undergirded wealth of this country, right? If you have no access to land, meaning assets, you have no, you know, wealth. You can't build wealth without it. And so that one action left the formerly enslaved in a position that they can only share crop, right? And mm-hmm. share cropping, which is a whole nother story, which is today's modern day temp services. Sharecropping left you with very little from year to be able to simply subsist in that condition. And so if you have centennial farms, which we do here in Champaign-Urbana, and you look back at that centennial farm and see how that farm came to be in the hands of the current family members of those farms, you will see the effects of the 1877 compromise by Rutherford B. Hayes. And it has gone on through policy for hundreds of years to keep some communities economically disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And that's how we are situated today. Now, they say, well, we gave loans, you know, after World War II, the New Deal came along, right? And the New Deal gave opportunity to poor people in America. Not one loan that was provided during Roosevelt's New Deal went to a black person. They were forbidden to get loans for businesses or home purchasing at that time.
And so we should go back to right. to our brother, the one who is reduced to a slogan of having a dream, who says, no, here you see, this is where the undergirding takes place, right? Mm-hmm. So whether you got a program out there that you are part of, where are the resources to sustain and support that program? Or is it just supposed to be you working that program through all your connections and your friends and stuff like that? Or are there actual resources to say we're going to undergird this program to give it the best opportunity to be successful? So here's the land, i.e. here's the program. Here's the education that goes along with it. So I'm going to build I'm going to build colleges all over the country called land grant institutions to educate you and create extension programs and botany and fields and all these other different opportunities for you to build upon that. Right. But then I'm going to give you the money at low interest rates so that you can mechanize and you can build upon. You can actually make some money off of this particular this land that you have. Right.
Because you need the assets, you need the education in order for you to have the economics.
Right. And there you go. See, now you have the. But see, what we also have to understand is that this is where you talk about this centennial farm. Mm-hmm. Right. Centennial meaning that you got a 100-year farm
over
in your family.
Years. Mm-hmm.
And we have people who are very proud. This farm has been in my family for over 100 years. Mm-hmm. Well, that takes us back to about where we at, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Takes you back to about 1916.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it was part of that 1877 compromise,
well,
right?
Well, it passes on, you know.
Well, certainly we have to be, and this is where, you know, I'm taking a lot of heat recently about what I consider to be civil discourse and uncivil discourse. For you to act like our liberal friends or folks who are not so liberal, who are completely on the other side, who say that, who are proud of this, these assets, right? European people who came here and colonized or pillaged the Native American and those who are already here to get this. If you say you're proud of what you have, then those who were those assets that were passed on, then you have to be careful that you're not saying that you're proud of what it took to get it.
So I think that the you know, I didn't look
from,
at
that's from my perspective.
Look, the history is the check and balance, right, of reality. But most people don't want history because it does make you responsible for the thing that you're claiming as yours.
That's right.
And so when you and I didn't see your comments verbatim, but when you made your reference to the use of the term alien or
illegal
mm-hmm. In relationship to people who are from Latin American countries or any other country that may not be documented, right, mm-hmm. in this whole discussion about sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
In that discussion, you go and say, well, how dare you call someone illegal or mm-hmm. alien?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you your history. That's painful. That's painful for people who want the assets without the responsibility of history.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have simply said to this audience, if that's what I chose to do, to say, well, there's something called the Indian land grab. Have you ever heard of it? The Indian land grab was used to literally take through violent racial massacres. That sounds better, don't it?
I guess. I guess that's more civil. But
it's
go
more
ahead.
Civil. See, when you define what civil is, which is where I would have objected to. But when you try to define civil, then you, okay, if you want me to define civil, then let me just give you history. History says that once Europeans colonized America, the invading settlers were begging their British king to destroy the, quote, savages at a faster rate than he already was. And therefore, they came up with the Indian land grab and they removed it. Andrew Jackson, in the Indian Removal Act of 1830, initiated a series of genocidal wars against Indian nations, killing most and evicting the rest from their own land.
Now, is murder illegal?
It's supposed to be.
Oh, I was just wondering.
It wasn't at
I
that mean, time.
Oh, they hadn't made the law for yet for
the
it to
policy
be illegal.
Confined the survivors on approximately 310 reservations. Now I can take you to wait a minute. I can take you through this historical moment
mm-hmm.
to current day North Dakota, who's fighting on their reservation to keep corporate America from decimating their water. See, so that may.
But that's uncivilized, Carol, for you to say that. You've got a lot of nerve.
I'm giving you the history of the Andrew Jackson's Indian Removal Act. And I'm saying that these are policies. And because the average American, no matter where they come from, don't want to deal with the reality of the conditions that are current by putting analysis on the historical policies that created them, they are then left to be innocent of the behaviors that resulted. And that's what was objectifying in that discussion last Monday that you participated in. And people who are responding to you have not read the Indian Removal Act because they don't want to be responsible for the
actions. Selective amnesia is what it's called.
So that my response would have been a little different, saying this country is accustomed, right, to mm-hmm. doing certain things through policy, and the attempt to make people alien is to dehumanize them, therefore you can treat them in any kind of way. That's what I would have suggested for you.
Interesting.
That's the point.
I want to do my underwriting announcement here. Kevin Elliott Counseling. Caller, you're there, but I'm going to ask you to hold just for a second.
Sure.
Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ELLIOTT CounselingGroup.com. Or you can reach them at 217-398-9066. That's 217-398-9066. Kevin Elliott Counseling. Go ahead, caller. You are on the air.
Okay. Good morning. This is Jim Iman. I'm glad you brought up the Hayes-Tilden decision. Samuel Tilden was a Lincoln Republican. Rutherford B. Hayes was the Democratic Party at that time. And you might say this was another decision made by a... Since he got the majority, Tilden got the majority of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another, you know, college of, you know, the Electoral College, such as it was at the time. But it was horrific because it formally put away the Reformation of. Through a reconstruction, rather, what was dead on that, and it became the solid South to put the Democratic Party. But you might say that Rutherford B. Hayes was the original Dixiecrat. I'm really happy you brought that up. And anyway. Thanks for taking my call.
And thanks for calling. We appreciate you listening, man. All right. So look, I'm going to play. We went out on, I wouldn't say too much of a tangent, but we were trying to just kind of show the importance of when you talk about undergirding, whether it's government dollars, government loans, or the laws that are passed, right? That are fitting. I think as we talk about Dr. King, everyone's reminded of the Civil Rights Movement. And we hear so many people talk about the law, the law, the law, the law says. Well, the law used to say that two black people couldn't walk down the street together. Who wrote that law? Right? You know, and for what purpose? So we understand laws can be intentionally written for with malicious intent.
Yeah,
right,
you know, practice, with,
and to yes. for a discriminatory result. So we laws are. That's why you have a legislature. That's why you say, look, we want to change a particular law. It's not working anymore, and so the people are not just bound by the current law. You can actually change it, and so when you see something not working, that's why you have to be involved, especially with your local and state politics. So listen, we're going to play another clip. Martin Luther King Jr. on income inequality and redistribution of wealth.
Problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America, only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home. The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. And as I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation.
Carla, please hold for a second.
Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black
ugly and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. There's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, "Yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful."
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it
for a moment.
Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons.
All right, you also... You were listening to a collaboration of different speeches and statements by Dr. King. And the latter part of this is James Baldwin describing his thoughts about what was being shared. I won't play that for you. And we have a caller. I believe if you're still there, caller, go ahead.
Yeah, I love this discussion on land. And I just wanted to comment about how, you know, Illinois is a Native American word, yet we don't have any Indian reservations in Illinois. And we have a national forest named after an Indian tribe, yet we don't have any, you know, large, dense populations of Indians left in the state. And obviously, I think that's a tragedy. But, you know, when it comes to this type of what is a civil discourse, I think that that's a good place to start with any level of government. So thank you very much, and I love the show, and I think it's a wonderful discussion.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate the call. So listen, we love to hear from you all. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes before we move into the second phase of the show. You're listening to WEFT 90.1 FM on your listening dial. We have lots of folks who underwrite our programs and who do great work down here. The Art Theater is one of those places. And at the Art Theater, there are some movie listings for the week of Friday, December 23rd through Thursday, December 29th. Playing daily is Manchester by the Sea, starring Casey Affleck. This film follows an uncle who has to look after his teenage nephew after the boy's father dies. Also screening is the return of critically acclaimed Moonlight. From director Barry Jenkins, this film offers audiences a vital portrait of a South Florida youth at three stages in his life in a story laden with rich insights into the contemporary African-American experience. So you all should definitely support the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. Our good friend Austin McCain, a.k.a., well, I won't say what Amir calls him. He might not want us to let everybody know his nickname. All right, so listen, I just wanted to thank those who are supporting WEFT and the work that we do down here. We're always looking for other air shifters and for people to come and do your own programming or to volunteer your time and energy. And you can always make a donation. We support that as well. We need that as well. You know, it's more important than ever now. So we want you to support your community radio station because right now, that's all that we have to make sure that the people are getting the message of the people, the people's agenda, not a corporate message. So we read these underwritings. So because these are the local people here who are involved in progressive policies and trying to get work done in the community and to support people on the ground. And I want to hear from you. I've got a few more minutes before my next phase of our conversation. So give us a call at 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545 and tell me what you think about what you heard. Is this the Martin Luther King that you're used to? That's one thing. But also about what he's saying about economic undergirding the efforts within the African-American community with an economic floor that allows us to build upon. So give us a call, 217-359-5483, if you'd like to make a comment or to ask a question. So again, you're going to hear from so many different people over the next few, starting in January about Martin Luther King's and different celebrations, and I do have a few of them listed here that I want to share with you soon. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm just calling in to say how much I appreciate what you're doing on your program here this morning. A great Christmas present, and very reassuring, and it's nice to know that people really are, some people are not buying into the nuclear war idea.
Okay.
I'm saddened, by the way, that many unwhite people have been treated by my people, and I apologize for my contribution in that direction, and say to you that I really appreciate the support of what you folks are doing, and I think a lot of white people don't realize that the indigenous people of every shade, every stripe, are standing up, and it's time for us to listen. And I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I really appreciate your call, man. It really does hit the heart, and I appreciate the apology and all that. You know, it really does mean something to me, and I appreciate you calling in.
Well, have a nice day. Merry Christmas, and we're listening.
Well, thank that was you. One of the best gifts I've gotten in a long time. Talk to you later. Thanks a lot, man.
Mahalo.
All right. Wow. I'm just going to say wow. That was important to me. You know, I don't want to exist only in an echo chamber. You know, I know that a lot of people do that, meaning that you kind of yell out and you preach to the choir and stuff like that. It is not my intent when I'm speaking to degrade or belittle anyone. That is really not what I'm trying to do. I know that it's difficult at times for people to accept a reality or to accept that there is a pushback. One of the comments that was pushed forward about my comments at council last week was that I was trying to set the terms on what is a civil discourse. I would say that that's true. But I'm also responding to the terms or the parameters that have been set thus far about what a civil discourse is. Why does the dominant group who has been enslaving, raping, robbing, and murdering get to set the parameters as to what a civil discourse is? Why would I agree to something like that? Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, you asked the question just before my last call. My response to Martin Luther King's comments, one glaring thing that jumps out at me is he didn't just address black people by any stretch. I very much respect that, appreciate that, and acknowledge his important place in making peace happen.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we want to also connect these thoughts around economics in particular. Social justice has to be tempered with or matched with economic justice in order for there to actually be a sustainable community. So here's an example of what I'm talking about locally. So I have been following very closely, of course, the developments in Bristol Park and the Bristol Park development. And so there's a lot of work that's going on, a $60 million project in North Champaign. And so there's a group called National Council of African American Men who's been in the community for a long time. It's a 501c3 non-for-profit organization with Artist James as the chair and Brother Byron Clark is the president. And many of the board members are made up of African American men. And so we have been following this, and NCAM has partnered with the number one developer in the entire country, McCormick Barron Salazar, the number one affordable housing developer in the country, not in the area, not in the state, in the entire country out of St. Louis. And so that partnership would ultimately result in opportunities for the local community to be a part of that development and to reap the benefits of working on a development project in our community. And so Brother Craig Walker is going to call in to educate us further about where that process is, how it works, and how it would be, why it was so important for our community to have access to and to be a part of a project like that. So I want you all to stay tuned, and he's going to call in at 217-359-6545. Therefore, the other line will be available. 359-5483 will be available. What we're talking about this morning is why, of course, we support social justice, but why economic justice in particular in the African-American community is so important. And as you all are thinking about that, you're thinking about the hopefully you're thinking about the other ethnic groups and how they have benefited and how they have thrived in America, in North America. But many of those ethnic groups were not enslaved and were not used to build the infrastructure and to create wealth for the white community, for the wealthy whites in America. And so to leave us as a people, as Dr. King said, without our check, without our reparations, without our economic undergirding so that we might be successful as a community and as a people here in North America is uncivil, to say the least. So I'm waiting on Brother Walker to call in, 217-359-6545, Brother Craig. And those who are listening, if you want to join the conversation, the other line will be available for you at 217-359-5483. And so if you have been following this Bristol Park development, this is just one opportunity for economic support, economic undergirding. And the National Council of African American Men was certainly looking forward to whatever benefits or resources the organization would receive from the partnership and from the development so that we might continue working on things like the Pathways to Apprenticeship program, where we introduced young men, in particular young African-American men, to the trades right over at Douglas Center. Just an introductory type of thing where they could see and meet the people who run the trades. And we're talking about gainful employment. We're talking about living wage opportunities where these gentlemen, these young men would have access to learning the skills of a carpenter or a bricklayer or a plumber, or a pipe fitter, iron workers, electricians. Those are the what you call building trades. And we were looking to introduce them to those people who make those decisions, those hiring decisions, and put them into that field, in that industry, because it is you're talking $25, $30, $35, $40 an hour. That's the type of money that the building trades make, depending on which skill that you are involved in or which trade you're involved in. And we wanted to do more things like the shut-ins that we did at the Boys and Girls Club, where we had 40, 50 young men stay the night. And we have one-on-one sessions with them. We watch movies and have a discussion with them about what we saw. Midnight basketball was a part of it. And we stayed all night long until the next day and had breakfast together. We wanted to continue to do, to support, people like Brother Larice, who's teaching young people self-defense through, jiu-jitsu and different small businesses that we might be able to partner with that would undergird the goals and objectives that many have in the African-American community. Those are some of the things that we were trying to accomplish with that partnership, and that we continue to look forward to making that happen. So I do not know what is holding my brother up here, but I'm sure waiting on him. Give me one second here. All right, so Sister Carol has abandoned me. I don't know where she went to, and I'm feeling all alone. So I still want to hear from you all if you have any particular questions. I do want to make these announcements too. Martin Luther King Celebration and Awards. This one is coming up here. Out of a mountain of despair, a stone of hope, the 16th annual Champaign Countywide Martin Luther King Celebration and Awards. Friday, January 13th of 2017 from 4 to 5 p.m. at Parkland College, the Student Union U Building, 2400 West Bradley Avenue in Champaign, the keynote by Christopher Benson. The event is free and reception to follow is open to the public. You can go to www.cc-mlk.org. That is www.cc-mlk.org. I think this is our caller. Go ahead, caller. You are on the air.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm good. How's everything today?
Everything is wonderful. Yes, indeed. Everything is wonderful. So talk to us a little bit. Tell us who you are.
Well, this is Craig Walker.
The infamous Craig Walker.
Yeah, the notorious, and some would say, you know, depending upon where you live. in fact, I think Dan McCullum described me as nefarious.
Nefarious, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you. So other folks always try to dictate the terms, and then when you try to say, well, no, well, we're going to dictate the terms, then you get called names. But look, man, we know what we have to do, and you have been very focused on economic development, and that's been your world as an investment banker and stuff like that. You understand economics and how that impacts a person's life or even a group of people. So I gave the listeners somewhat of an overview of Bristol and what the partnership between National Council of African American Men and McCormick Barron Salazar is, and what the intent for NCAM was and how to service the community. But we're waiting to hear from you, man.
Oh, okay, great. I appreciate it. Sorry I dialed in a little late. This, you know, one of the things is I grew up in Champaign, Illinois, and I had a unique experience growing up here because I grew up in South Champaign, and one of the things that I have obviously became aware of as a young child, even through adulthood, is the disparity of investment between South Champaign and North Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, even within our own community, we have at times not appreciated our home base, our community being North Champaign and what we affectionately call the North End. Bristol Park is an interesting project in the sense that we have been fighting for this since about 2011. And it represents the single largest investment in North End Champaign by the city, by governing authorities in our total history. It's about a $60 million project.
Hmm.
And what people have to understand is when there's a $60 million investment going in our community, the question becomes, do we control that investment or do we let others control how that investment is implemented? And, of course, you know, NCAM was very fortunate to bid with the number one development company for low-income housing in the country. And typically, when you go with the number one firm, you're going to win. And through this process, what we have learned is that because, you know, city officials began to move forward with Bristol. Bristol began to get traction. There was a city council passed the master plan. City council started demolishing houses. The housing authority committed vouchers. And so a lot of us were enthusiastic that thinking that, wow, the city is really going to do this. Because as we know, there's been very or little investment in our community over the past 30 years. And so we went through that process. And through that process, and it's not over. One of the things I've been told is or heard from people is, oh, is that over? Or Has that decision been final? No, that decision is not final, but the city council did direct the staff to negotiate an agreement with another company that wasn't our, wasn't the NCAM McCormick Barron team. And what we found when we did our investigation on this company, what we found was not only had they violated certain wage laws, ripped off African-American employees, ripped, didn't pay African-American contractors the amount that they were owed, because this company turned out to be the same company that was developing the housing project out in South Sycamore.
Craig, this is Sister Carol. Can you hold the line 1 second? We have a caller on 6545, and I don't know if they want to ask you a question
or one to us.
A caller who's on 6545, go ahead and make your question or a comment.
Give you season's greetings, and Aaron sounded so plaintive there for a moment before that caller came in. But on the subject of Bristol Place, I think it should be tied in with Time Center and the whole idea that the city fathers and mothers are like trying to get another corridor up into Sprawlville on Market Street. I see that as the sort of a common denominator. We have these excludable others, Bristol Place inhabitants, the homeless at the Time Center. They want to deal with this, you know, what they see as an important traffic problem. There's a scholar of urban planning that uses the development out in North Market, North Prospect, as one of the worst he's ever seen because of the just the traffic patterns.
So Paul, I'm going to interrupt you right there and let Craig address that in the Bristol Park discussion that we're having, and I appreciate you calling in.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
See you in a bit. Bye.
Well, you know, and your caller made a very good point. And one of the things, as you know, Sister Carolyn, is things come up in our community. Needs come up in our community. And we always got to ask. We got to ask somebody to help us with our needs. So one of the things is why we structured NCAM with McCormick Barron, and understand that in all low-income housing projects, doesn't matter who's doing it, there's going to be a nonprofit involved, because that's how you capture the tax credits on the financing. And that nonprofit is going to generate revenue as kind of what we call a conduit issuer, a issuer that you're able to issue bonds and tax credit financing through to be able to access those. So that conduit is going to generate revenue and earn income. With NCAM positioned as that conduit, it stood to, and it will, make a substantial amount of revenue in excess of $1 million. So coming back to what we were talking about, he mentioned the Time Center. The Time Center has a need. We got to ask. And so what NCAM was looking to do was position itself in a way that we don't have to ask, that we have as a organization that has funding through development in our own community that will have the ability to address needs within our community without having to ask some governmental body. So coming back to that, so we're very excited. I remember in the 2014 campaign, mayoral candidate Deb Finan said, oh, yes, I promise we're going to have a TIF, a tax increment financing district, for North Champaign. We're going to do Bristol Park. So we're a little excited because it seems as though they see the vision. Subsequent to that, we found, as I was discussing, that a company that, you know, has some experience in this, it's a construction company, and you know, I'm not disparaging anybody, but I do know that there is a certain game in this business. I've seen it. I've been in this round for 25 years. And that game is play the minority game by putting a minority face in front. But the true dollars, the true owner, is a white company. So this company is a construction company out of Joliet, and they did, as I mentioned, Sycamore and a couple other housing projects with a black-owned developer out of Atlanta. Now, I recently FOIA'd the Housing Authority to ask in 2015 who were the top recipients of dollars from the Housing Authority. Well, this construction company, Carlson Construction, was number one, $30 million. They had received $30 million in construction dollars from the Housing Authority. Now, the developer, the minority developer they had from Atlanta, wasn't even on the list.
Okay, hold up. So we do want to make sure things are plain, right? And I heard it. So the construction company is number one on who got the most money from the Housing Authority, our local Housing Authority, since 2015. But the black-owned companies that they put up didn't even make the cut as the top paid people or people who got the most money out of it from the Housing Authority. Didn't even make the cut.
Now, so that tells you, one, because if you're a true developer, you're going to make that cut. So then when this company won the bid, now, I won't even say won the bid because they didn't win the bid, won a recommendation. They won a recommendation, and there's a difference. You can recommend somebody, mm-hmm. but until the council actually approves the contract, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they won the recommendation, and it became, and after we did our research, it became very clear to us that the white folks wasn't even, we thought they were enthusiastic about developing Crystal Park. But it turns out Bristol Park was just an avenue to make their friends money. That's the whole reason they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $60 million project, and I'm not going to go into all of it because it's very explosive and we're saving it. But there's some very key, powerful, politically connected folks, not from Champaign. I'm talking about from the halls of power of Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Who are connected to this company, they got the bid. So now we understand, or got the recommendation. Because I'm very, very clear. There's a difference between recommendation and actually getting the approval.
That's
so
right.
It became very clear to us very early. We got due. They weren't doing this project to help our community. They were doing this project to get their people paid. So fortunately, we've been very active on this. And what coming back to what the vision is that, and why we as a community have to fight for this very part, is that what we control, what is under our control, is what we can do to impact our community. And in what I would call the Donald Trump era, we have to stop thinking about what we can ask for. We have to stop thinking, what will they give us? What will they approve for us?
Mm-hmm.
We have to think local and state level, activated from a voting perspective, what can we control and do for ourselves? And so in the terms of this Bristol Park project, if NCAM, and they will be, if NCAM, and let me just be very clear, I have removed myself in terms of any profit or anything from development. I am consultant to the project to assist it happening, but it's all going to the NCAM side. What will be happening is that we will, on a $50 million development project, if NCAM is able to, over a 4 or 5 year period, let's just call it $1 million. So as your caller just said, we've got, you know, there's needs at a church. NCAM will have a, you know, funds to disperse to a church to assist.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a development partner to help develop certain projects. We will have a development partner who will reinvest back in our community. So when you're talking about the Time Center, which is a black eye on the city of Champaign with the resources that it has, that the people who control this town, and understand, this town has always been controlled by a few people at the top. That's what we've been fighting for. It's my dad fought for and your family fought for back in the early 60s. As long that they control us, that they, we can't even have a shelter for the homeless. That shows you how much they don't care.
And with all of the millions of dollars of development,
they spent on millions of dollars
in downtown Champaign, just left a new restaurant last night, all of the money and the incentives that are given down there. And this is what Sandra Otten has been saying, that there's no way between the cities, the two cities in the county and the university, that you can't fund a small homeless shelter on the north end. That just means you don't want to. That's all that means. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that, because the money is available to do that.
What they want to do is have the people who were in that shelter be discombobulated, be out of
dispersed. Mm-hmm.
Dispersed, commit crimes, and go back to jail. That's what they want you to do. The one beauty I love about Donald Trump, and I think what I call the Donald Trump era as we go through, is all the covers are coming up. Mm-hmm. See, folks are getting comfortable that they can be what they want to be. And I'm good with that. I want you to be. We need to take the shields off, take the blinders off. But we have to double our efforts as a community. And, you know, one of the things in terms of our, you know, I'm part of North End Breakfast Club, is we all have a role. And the most important thing is for us to understand we all have a role, we all have a lane, but guess what? We got to get on the highway. We got to start our cars and get activated. If your strength is the ability to reach out and help the young youth stay out of trouble, don't get discouraged by one or two who might go back, make an impact, then that's what we need you to do. If your strength is the ability to go out and talk to the people in the community and make them understand that they need to vote, then that's what you need to do. We all need to get in on the highway and get in our proper lane and start driving, because the good thing about Champaign and Urbana is it's not a big community. It's small enough that it doesn't take a lot to make a huge impact. And it requires radical change. I'm not talking about, you know, just, we've been working very hard over several years. We've made incremental change. But even when you talk about the Time Center, the question we have to ask ourselves is, how does City of Champaign have a summer youth employment program? And I was just talking about this in my Uber ride home, because the guy said, hey, you know, it's summertime, you know, when the kids kind of leave, you can't get no jobs here. So we have a summer youth employment program in Champaign spending about $150,000 a year. It's so far spent almost over the last 6 years close to $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we have none in Urbana. Because Urbana, and yet the Urbana mayor is proposing to spend a $20 million project for a hotel that ain't going to employ us. So we ask ourselves, the mayor's very intense. She doesn't spend a lot of time on trying to figure out how to spend $25 million for a hotel that we know is not going to employ any of us and spend taxpayer dollars on it. But she can't figure out how to spend $50,000 to $100,000 to employ youth in our community. And there's studies all across the country that show you that if youth have a job, if they are working, if they get training, they're not going to commit crime. It's going to keep them away from trouble. And so the investment up front to give them those skills, to give them the opportunity to work, is well worth it from an economic perspective, as opposed to just not having anything and all you do is wrong, you know, have a possibility for getting in trouble. So there's a mayor's race coming up in Urbana. And in this mayor race, I'm going to be unapologetic. I am for our sister, who's running, help me on this.
Dr. Underwood.
Dr. Underwood, that's right.
And Reverend Dr. Evelyn Underwood.
Reverend Dr. Underwood, and she, because she will impact change. She's not about the way we used to be. And Urbana has a unique opportunity, and what it has to do is understand, don't listen to the naysayers. They're going to tell you she can't win. That's what they want you to believe. That's what they're going to try to tell you. She can't win. Well, guess what? You and I all know. I remember in 2013 when a certain seat was coming open, and they told us, oh, she can't win. You know, she can't win. She's a Muslim. She has Muslim connections. She has this. She has that. She can't win. And we didn't believe that. And not only did Sister Carol Emmons go on to win, not only defeating the most powerful man in the state in terms of Michael Madigan, but then defeating the most powerful people in this city who were backing her opponent on the Republican side. So she won twice.
And not to mention those who are running for mayor now who were opposed to her as well.
Exactly. And you know, that's my test.
Talking about not Dr. Underwood. Dr. Underwood was standing with Carol the whole time.
Exactly. And that's my test. You know, the one thing we recently had this, and there was a guy who was about to run, and he wants black support. And, you know, we can measure each candidate. But if you weren't for our candidate, when the going was tough, if you weren't for Carol Emmons in the primary, then you don't get a lot of special consideration. You can still get consideration, but guess what? I might not be with you, because guess what? We don't owe you nothing. Because the candidate from our community, who was clearly the best legislator on the county board, the best legislator at the city, there's no better way to look at it is if you go back to the tape when the state's attorney was in there and said she didn't need to be on the committee, and she let it be known. No, I'm going to be on it. If there is a committee, Carol Emmons will be on the committee. And that's what happened. And so there was already a track record there. And so if you aren't with our candidates back then we don't owe you nothing. Now, we'll still consider you, but we owe you zero. And one thing about Dr. Underwood is she was with us. But not only that, she represents what she is very much what Carol represents. And that's a significant change in the direction of the allocation of the resources within government. If you want the same old, same old, they're going to reallocate the resources to the people with money to do projects to get them paid. That's what they do.
Yes, indeed. So, look, I know you shared a lot. We got about 30 minutes left. I do want to encourage people who are listening to call in with any particular questions or concerns.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate your time, and I just want to say one last thing.
Well, no, I don't want you to go yet. Okay. I'm just doing a little station identification break here. You're listening to 90.1 FM on your listening dial. This is Higher Ground with Brother Aaron Ammons, a.k.a. Brother A-Dub, Alderman Ammons, also with State Representative Carol Ammons, who is in and out of the studio taking care of some other things. And on the line with us is Mr. Craig Walker at North End Breakfast Club, talking about Bristol Park economic development and the distribution of resources within Champaign County, in Urbana and Champaign in particular, talking about the Bristol Park development, spring elections that are coming up. We're going to get into all of that in the next 30 minutes, but I also wanted to talk to you, the listeners out there, to see if you had a question or a concern. You can dial 359-5483, 217-359-5483 if you'd like to join this conversation, ask a question. If you have a different perspective, let's rock and roll. Let's get it on. 217-359-5483. We also have, just talking about the spring elections that are coming up. Craig, you touched on the mayoral race. There's going to be a primary race between the current mayor, Laurel Pressing, Diane Marlin, and as you talked about, the Reverend Dr. Evelyn B. Underwood will be also in that race. It is a three-way primary race that will take place on February the 28th. in the city of Urbana. It will be the only primary in Urbana. Brother Wayne Williams, at this particular point, who's running for assessor in Urbana, is unopposed. Danielle Chenoweth, sending my best regards out to you, wishing you well, Danielle, will be running for the township supervisor. Charlie Smythe, excuse me?
They'll be on the ballot.
Even in the primary, they'll be on the ballot. You still have to, because some people could do a write-in. You know what I mean? I was told that maybe there'll be somebody doing a write-in campaign against me. So I need everybody to get out. I'm also on the ballot for Ward 3. So the only contested primary that we know of is the mayoral race in Urbana. But we do need you to get out, and the folks in the city of Urbana to get out on February 28th and to vote for all of your ward members. Your ward representatives and aldermen. And then in the city of Champaign, whoever's calling the landline, if you're calling that 359-9338 number, Sister Carol is back in the booth with me now. So you need to call us at 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483 if you want to ask a question or to be heard on the air. So most of the elections, the real crux of the elections, the spring elections, will boil down to April 4th, I believe it is. Yes, April 4th. Primary is February 28th. The other elections is April 4th. I'm going to take this call here. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Aaron, this is Brother Martell. Hey, when we talking about all the development going on in Champaign, do we have a 20-year plan or 10-year plan, what they got planned for us? Because we don't get to see them things. If we knew what their plan was, we know what direction they were going in.
All right. Appreciate the call, my man.
Brother Martell, right. Good to hear from you, bro.
All right. So just kind of finishing up on these spring elections. Very, very important. Brother Craig and I and Carol have laid out what the local impact is on you. All the tax dollars are collected the same way, but they're distributed in a different way. That's what we're talking about here, right? And you have to be in this game of development, perpetual development, contracts and things like that. Like Brother Patrick Thompson or Troy Dean or Brother Ducey and other people that we've seen, black businesses who are saying, look, we want in on this level of development and opportunities within our community. So these local elections that are coming up, these municipal elections, your city council and township elections that are coming up are extremely, extremely important. And as Craig talked about, you know, knowing your position and knowing your role, everybody who is an eligible voter should be in this lane. Now, we see a tremendous drop off from the presidential election to the spring elections. And you have all politics are local. You have much more impact on your local politicians and your local economy through your vote for your local elections. And yet we see in our community and in communities across Champaign County where people do not come out and vote in the municipal elections. So I'm saying to you, make your commitment. Talk to your friends and family and loved ones and say, look, we have to get out and vote in record numbers in this election that's coming up on April 4th, right? February 28th is the primary in Urbana, but also the overall general election on April 4th. We need everybody hitting those polls like you normally do. You're not going to get all of the commercials and radio ads and all that kind of stuff that you got from the presidential election. So you have to be in the know and you have to help me and Sister Carol and Brother Craig spread the word. You have to call people, talk to people, Facebook, tweet, instant message. You have to help us amplify this message of how important the local elections are going to be in the city of Champaign. Angela Slates is running for District 5. I'll have her on the show at some point. Alicia Beck is running in District 2 against Michael Ledoux. I think Azar Cobb was kicked off the ballot. I'm not sure. I think so in District 1. So Clarissa Foreman is running in District 1. Look, we've got some folks that we've got to get out and support. So make sure that you are getting informed. I'll do my best to get all of these candidates on the show at some point to have a conversation with them and allow you to make your decision. But definitely, you know, I look forward to doing whatever I can to help Sister Angela Slates, Alicia Beck, So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. That's where these other candidates are going to be running, and I want to make sure that they get the support that they need. So, Brother Craig, you still on the line with us?
Yeah, I am, Aaron, and it was great hearing that and what you just outlined. And I do want to say to the those who are listening, and please tell your friends, the Champaign-Urbana Black community needs to be very proud of their voter participation. The voter participation in Champaign-Urbana within the Black community has been on an upward trend since 2011. And we have outperformed the rest of the state. We have voted at a greater percentage than many other communities, Decatur, Peoria, others. And you can see some of those results occur. Clearly, we see those results as it relates to having the only Black elected official at the state level in downstate Illinois, in Carol Ammon. So I do think the community should pat itself on its back and be, proud of the participation. As you know, when we're out canvassing in the community, folks is aware. We're not getting blank stares. We're not getting, in fact, I recall when I knocked on one of the old G's, and he said, "Hey, vote is the way to go." Took a picture of some sign, sent it out to his whole deck. Get out and vote. So we as a community need to be proud. But the best part is there's a lot more that we can do. We're at a, historically, think about this from a percentage basis, let's call it non-presidential election year and municipal election. Mm-hmm. Or off-year elections, we participated at about somewhere between 6 and 10%.
Hmm.
I remember back when Don Girard was first running, and he was good friends with Tom Bruno. And Tom Bruno, and he told Tom Bruno, I'm gonna fight for the Black vote. Tom Bruno said, "You're wasting your time. That's going to get you about 100 votes."
Hey, look, we got another call coming in. Let me take this other call, sure, too, Craig. Go ahead, caller. You on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Go ahead.
How you doing? My name is Ted Burnett, and I was born in Urbana, and now I live in California, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 1000, which represents the state of California workers.
Stronger together, brother. Solidarity.
Hey, that's it. And so the point is about the election, people are disenfranchised with what happened in the national election, but we need to use it as an opportunity to be able to understand that if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. And if you don't remember, less than 52 years ago, we didn't have a right to vote. And that in our generation, people, our parents, didn't have the right to vote, and people got dog sticks on them. They got hung. They got assaulted because they wanted to vote. We should not forget about the past in order to plan for the future. So the local elections are just important because the right wing has put their agenda on a national viewpoint, and now they are systematically working to bring local elections down to that national level, so they can control the national, the state politics, and in Washington. So it's a concerted effort by everyone, whether you like a candidate or not. If you have African American candidates running, we need to support them. My mother is running for mayor of Urbana. She served that community since 1968, raised me to be the person that I am today, and be involved in politics. So we need to support our own, because if we don't support our candidates, we cannot have a voice in what's going on in the future and enable to pass it down to the next generation. And I wanted to say that today.
Well, I sure appreciate you calling, man. And like I tell all my people,
thank you.
That purple and gold is strong and bold, man, even in the cold. Look,
let me tell you, and I want to, you know, I talked to my mother about you going through the contract negotiations. If you need anything, I have your number. I'll call you, because the state of California, which represents all the state of California workers in the SEIU, we help the state get prosperous by taking furloughs under Governor Schwarzenegger in 2009 and 2010, and we help the state get back in the black. And the governor turned his back on us, even though we got him elected. So on December 5th, we called for a strike, and the state didn't believe that we can organize people together. So on December 5th, we were going to shut down the state of California. And at the last minute, on December 2nd, the governor came and said, "What do you need?" We negotiated the richest contract in the history of California, $5.2 billion worth of contract, money, benefits, to be able to secure for the future and everything else. And all it does is take everyone coming together and being on one accord, because these institutions, like the University of Illinois and the state, they have money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to give it to the people, and they think that people should work for free. And we as a people should understand that when we raise the minimum wage, it balances things out, so people above who have collective bargaining agreements also can make money to take care of their families, to be able to take care of health care and have good retirements, so that they can feed into the economy of our cities and our state.
Yes, sir. So, hey, man, I'm going to reach out to you. I definitely appreciate you, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother.
All right, peace and blessings. So I do want to just quickly say, hold on for a second, Craig. I do want to quickly say to our what folks is calling in now. Go ahead. I mean, Carla, hold on just for a second. So I wanted to say, as far as an update, as the lead negotiator for our local chapter of SEIU, Chapter 119, we are currently in negotiations with the University of Illinois, and the message is pretty clear. They are willing to give Barbara Wilson, they have created a position for Barbara Wilson to make $450,000 a year plus benefits. Right now, that is over half of what it would cost to pay 730 workers a dollar more an hour. So they'd rather give one person $450,000 plus benefits than to give 730 people $1. I can't make it no plainer than that. Right. We represent 730 people, and we ask them, our health care is about to double under this right wing governor. Who needs to go, and we're going to be working like I don't know what to make sure he gets out of there, trying to bust the unions and bust collective bargaining and take away the opportunity for working people and for the less fortunate amongst us to have a decent life, right? So they want to double our health care and tell us that, you know, you don't have any money for us, at the same time saying that we do have $450,000 a year for one person. Right. And to mention, and look, and when they brought the brother in finally as a chancellor, he doesn't have the authority to just be chancellor. He has to answer now to this Barbara Wilson, to the white female, as a go-between him and President Kaylin. So when they finally do bring in a black chancellor, he doesn't have the same authority that the other chancellors had. Right. So they're going to pay this woman $450,000 to be his I'm not going to say that word. His boss. We'll just say boss, because we know what boss translates to, right? That's what it boils down to. But they're going to pay her $450,000 and at the same time tell us they don't have any money. Then turn around and give Kaylin a $100,000 bonus, but we don't have any money, right? So we know that they have money, but what they have said to us is that if you don't make us pay you, we ain't going to pay you. That's what the bottom line is. So all of our members out there, retired folks, community people who support working people, we need you to stand with SEIU Chapter 119 and our current negotiations with the University of Illinois so that we demand, we are demanding a fair contract and a fair wage to cover our cost of living increases, doubling of our health care and things like that. And make sure you stand with the AFSCME workers who are in current negotiations with the governor, who is using all of his billionaire power to buy off people and put people in positions on the labor board and various other places to break AFSCME and to get us to have this, to make everybody double their health care. I mean, this is an absolute, just dangerous and draconian type of cuts to people who, some people who are making $17,000-$18,000 a year, that you're going to double their health care, right? That's what's going on. So when AFSCME puts out the call, if they put out a call to go on strike, then we have to stand firm with them to make sure that this governor and that those with the power players in the University of Illinois or in the state of Illinois understand that working people are going to stand together. That's just the bottom line. If we don't stand together, then we're going to get picked off. So AFSCME, we need to support AFSCME. So please support us at SEIU Chapter 119 for our negotiations as well. And you see us out there, come stand with us. Wear that purple and gold, wear that green. Make sure you stand with the working people. So,
Aaron,
had to get that out of
there. Point. I'm glad you brought this up, and I'm really glad that brother called in. The son of Dr. Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to understand that he's out there fighting in California and for the people. And what you just mentioned in terms of the University of Illinois paying somebody $450,000, which I can guarantee you, I mean, you have to look at a resume. There is no job at the University of Illinois worth $450,000, okay? Nobody should be getting paid that. And what you will, if you look at the University of Illinois, you will see politically connected people who are earning $100,000, who do nothing. They are enjoying the full benefits of their white privilege. And what they do is they get paid salaries, 95, 98, 110. I've showed a few of those to Carol just to know. They do nothing. All you do is see them post things on LinkedIn. If you actually dig down to what they actually do every day, they don't do anything. And so they got fancy titles like corporate engagement and all that. Well, they're not engaging anybody. They're getting paid off politically at a rate to make them comfortable within their societal friends, and that's at $95,000 to $100,000. They can eliminate five of those positions right now. The University of Illinois would not miss a beat.
Right.
And give that $500,000
To the hard we always say
making an impact.
We always say chop from the top, chop, chop, chop from the top. Okay, listen, I got another call on 5483. Go ahead, caller, you on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a comment about the Time Center issue.
All right, go ahead.
I wanted to explain that the Time Center has always been an organization that was operated by community elements, and now they've partnered, so their new name is Rose France. So I'm not sure that the cities and the county could actually operate a facility like the Time Center, because you need a care provider to actually monitor and do the work. And always the Mental Health Board has helped to fund some of the programs at the Time Center. And I think that the agency with Community Elements was probably getting resources from the state, and a lot of that money has virtually dried up. So I think it's kind of a waste of energy to think that Urbana City or Champaign City or the county board would operate a homeless shelter for anybody. I don't think that's going to happen, but you do have taxing bodies like the Mental Health Board. You have 501 excuse me, 501c organizations like United Way, you have the churches. So if the whole community wants to really put a dent in homelessness and also, you know, mental health services that really matter to people, I think we have the resources in this community to get it done. And the second,
let me ask the caller a question. Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry. You just said you think it might be a waste of energy as it relates to cities of Champaign or Urbana contributing to the Time Center. What makes you feel that?
They could contribute, but you still need a care provider. Like Rosecrans have basically said, they can no longer provide the services. The city of Urbana cannot. They don't give direct services like that, nor does the city of Champaign. The Mental Health Board can help fund a myriad of projects, but the agency doesn't offer direct services. So you have to have Prairie Center or Rosecrans. Those are the two agencies in our community right now to offer detox, you know, shelter or whatever.
So, Dr. Henry, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. We only got about 6 minutes left, and I do think I think it's pretty clear your point is well made that we don't offer those sort of direct services. And what we're looking for, I believe, is the type of partnership.
Right.
We have been given Rosecrans money, and I'm gonna have Sandra Otten is probably gonna come on the show with us next time, and we talk about this a little bit more because she's been digging into some of it as well. But we do need to understand how the process works. But certainly there should be a commitment by the cities. We don't have a homeless shelter basically anywhere now, right? With, you know, we just came out of some of the sub-degree below zero type of temperatures and stuff. And how could a city with a world-class university and all the thriving businesses in Champaign and the spirit of Urbana not have a secure and legitimate homeless shelter? That is a black eye.
If we really have the will, look at the population that most people feel would benefit, and there's just no commitment to poor people and people of color in this community.
Mm-hmm. So thanks
Second
for calling.
Thing, last thing is,
okay.
The University of Illinois that you were discussing, they have no commitment to black students. They have abandoned for the second year in a row the search for a director of the Bruce Nesbitt Cultural Center. That's ridiculous that they have. That position is unfilled. The black students don't have any connection at the university. They have them stuck off in some building over. They used to be a rec building or storage building for rec equipment. And they keep saying they can't find a director. If you offer a good salary and good benefits, you can find a director. They just have no commitment to black students.
All right, so look, thank you for calling. We only got 4 minutes left. Craig, I'm going to let you get the last shot. Talk to you soon.
No. Let me get the last shot.
No, Dr.
Evelyn Burnett Underwood for mayor of Urbana.
All right.
We all on that same page. And I appreciate you calling in, Dr. Henry, and it's good to hear from you. I think it's important to what she indicated is we must not get discouraged. We have made a lot of progress. But there's a lot more work to do. And what we have to understand is, you know, I'm 54. There's, you know, Aaron, you're in your 40s. We've got people in the North End Breakfast Club who are in their 20s and 30s. This is a generational fight. This fight didn't start with us. I remember my father, Phil Walker, and working with others like Mel Mitchell and John Lee Johnson and other community acts. They fought back then. This is a generational fight. And if you don't engage, if you don't get out the chair and get on this highway and get in your lane that can provide an activism for our community, you're missing out on the best part of life. This is the best part of life as it relates to personal satisfaction. Life is not about just taking care of our family. That's obviously a big, important part. But life is about making sure that the institutional structures have been changed in your lifetime
so that your grandkids and the little shorties that are running around, when they come up ready to get in the fight, that the goal, that we are closer to the goalpost, that we have moved the institutions closer. The fight's not going to get finished in my lifetime. I understand that. But my hope is that when the good Lord calls me, is that we've taken the fight farther, that we've moved the ball further down the field, that the ball that my father and other fathers have handed to us, we've taken it and moved it down the field so that when we get tired and old, that we turn the ball over, that the youngsters can see, wow, this fight is worth it. This fight is fun. This fight is for our livelihood, but it's also for our people, and it's also for our nation. And so Champaign-Urbana, while only being about 140,000 people, is a microcosm for our whole nation. And so as we relate to who we are, let us be more determined than ever that there will be no more let's just see what happens, that we will all engage, that we will all get out and vote, that we will all figure out a way to move that football of righteousness and social justice down that field, closer to the goal line, and to be able to make different scores that